Well, good morning and welcome to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark.
And I'm Ken Dilger.
And I'm Angie Kinzer.
There you go. Special in the house. We've got a neat show for you today. One thing leads to another. And when we look at the world today where we are, April 13th of 2019, Monday, you get to tell the IRS what happened last year. And so I'm going to do my best to poke you and prod you to make sure that as you go over the course of this year, that Ken and Angie and everybody listening to this show actively takes charge of their tax return. Now, I normally like to talk to you about how to read it, but if you haven't seen this new one, let's just say that it's ugly.
Right? Really?
So in my career, I started 2 weeks before the crash in 87. Okay? So Reagan had just changed the tax code in 1986. And the return that you're used to looking at, Ken, as you do mortgages, and Angie as a business owner, the tax returns that I was used to looking at have never changed. I mean, they may add a line, they would change the numbers, but the formula all worked pretty much the same. And so I would teach people about line 7, AGI, Schedule A, the types of deductions, even my poor wife, right? So I get my stuff together and take it to the CPA last week, and she has got all of our property taxes and our plates, you know, all of the things that you used to be able to deduct. Well, one of the things that happened is the salt tax, and you're capped at $10,000 of your deduction. So if you pay $10,000 to the state of Indiana last year, don't even bother getting the stuff for the plates, the property taxes, and because it's immaterial, it doesn't matter. Miscellaneous expenses that you used to be able to deduct, like dues and everything else, all that's gone. Anyhow, we're going to talk about that in the second conversation that we have today. One thing leads to another. This time it's the long form going to the short form. We're going to talk about unplanned distributions, QCDs revisited, and what your charitable strategy ought to be for the year, and the mega Roth IRA strategies that I am just fascinated with. They won't apply to all of you, but for those of you who do, it's a beautiful thing. Angie, it's going to be fun having you on the show. For those of you who don't know, she's our events coordinator at the Financial Enhancement Group. So when the phone rings and you're calling in to schedule a meeting, Angie is the one who says hello.
Yep. I'm usually the first voice that you talk to, and I try to answer any questions about the company that you may have so that when you do come in for an appointment, that kind of frees up your time to talk more about your actual portfolio or individual needs versus just general questions about the company that I can help with and get that out of the way.
Absolutely. All right. We'll take a break, get into the show. Consider this program at yourlifeafterwork.com.
Hi, Joni Michaels here. We know you care about your money, but are you tired of worrying about it? The Financial Enhancement Group takes care of people just like you who don't want to worry about their money. As fiduciaries, the team at the Financial Enhancement Group will care for your nest egg just like they would care for their own. If they were in your situation, there are many decisions you'll need to make as you face retirement, and the team at the Financial Enhancement Group is here to help you. Call 800-928-4001 or go to yourlifeafterwork.com to set up a time to meet. The confusion and complexity of retirement is almost as daunting as is the excitement of retirement. Don't let your fear and frustration of taxes and investing derail your retirement. Call the Financial Enhancement Group at 800-928-4001. They'll give you a complimentary second opinion on your strategy for retirement. Begin your adventure in your life after work. Call 800-928-4001 or yourlifeafterwork.com. Now back to Consider This program with Joe Clark.
Well, good morning and welcome to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark.
I'm Ken Dilger.
And I'm Angie Kinzer.
For those of you who missed the introduction, Angie, new to the show, but happy to have you along. How long have you been at the Financial Enhancement Group?
It'll be 8 years in April.
It is hard to imagine.
I know it.
You don't look like you've aged today.
I haven't.
Me, on the other hand. Anyhow, the title, the main topic, the big point today in the show is one thing leads to another. And I got asked one of those questions that I just really, really, really hate. Divorce is just not a good thing whenever it can be avoided. It's expensive, it's emotionally debilitating, and it's challenging. And I've had other friends that say, you know why divorce is so expensive, Ken?
Nope.
Because it's worth it. Right? And I just, you know, I've been married for 31 years. That's just not, you know, that's not part of my vocabulary. But I did a whole conversation on what you needed to think about if you were going through divorce back October 27th of 2018. So if you go to our podcast, Consider This Program, If you want to know about that, you can find that segment then, and I go into it. Today, we're just going to talk about unplanned distributions, right? So the three big ones, it's when you have to take money out of an account that you weren't intending to. It tends to come from a loss of a job, right? People say, well, what about college education or college funding? No, that's planned. You knew that was coming, right? Mm-hmm. It's when they were six, you knew 12 years from now, if they were going to go to college, they were probably going to go then, right?
Right.
So those are planned. You may not be prepared, but they're planned. These are ones that you're truly many times haven't planned for. So the loss of a job, obviously, is the big one. You know, when you've got to figure out how to make ends meet until you find that next place to go to paycheck. One of the things that's really important about the economy today is how low our unemployment rate is. What we look at is not what you hear the people on TV talk about. We look at a thing called continuing claims. That rate had started to tick up, but it's really, really very, very low right now. So we're in good shape there. The second one that's most common in people's lives is death, right? You lost somebody in your family, and it could be you bringing in money yourself, or it could be your loss of a spouse, or it could be money that had to leave an account. So Ken, here is the I try to give you real life examples, right?
Okay.
So there's a guy here in town that I had taken care of for about 20 years, and he had a brokerage account that was with us. We keep our money at TD Ameritrade, and he had a couple $100,000 in it. A little more than that. So when he dies, you get what's called a step up in basis. Angie, you know about all that. We talk about it a lot with our families. So the whole $250,000 or so was absolutely tax free to his sole survivor. Okay? Now, before he met me, he'd also bought a variable annuity that was actually an IRA. So an insurance guy had sold him this annuity contract. It was in an IRA. It was an annuity that was held as an IRA. So you don't get a step up in basis on that, Ken, when somebody dies.
Okay.
You don't get a step up in basis on that, Angie, when you get a divorce.
Right.
You don't. It just doesn't work that way. Right. So the insurance company receiving notice of father's demise, we this is one of the reasons why we try to take care of all of the families that we take care of.
Yeah, it's so confusing.
Meaning that it's not just Angie. We take care of Angie's daughter. We take, if we were talking about her, we want to take care of everybody so there's no confusion and this kind of stuff doesn't happen, right? We call it family bundling. Your kids may not have access or enough assets to be work with a wealth manager, but we take care of them anyhow at the same billing rate you get so that they don't get messed up before they get there. So nonetheless, we never had an opportunity to talk to his beneficiary. The insurance company sends this wonderful little letter. It says, by the way, you are now the proud recipient of $160,000 IRA. All right. One thing leads to another, guys. And when it comes to IRAs, it leads to taxes.
Yes.
All right. Somebody is going to pay him. You've heard me say that on the show 100 times, right? You will exit. You'll either exit by your own design. You will exit because the IRS forced you at 70 and a half, or you will exit because you passed away and your heirs get to deal with it. So the spouse's beneficiary sees this $160,000 and goes, oh, this is cute, right? Calls the company and asks for a check. Takes the $160,000, Ken, and promptly pays off the house, right? Now, I'm all about debt-free. I got this. I understand why that was a beautiful, beautiful thought, right? How much of the $160,000 was taxable, though, Ken?
Boy, good question. I would say a good portion of it.
All of it.
Well, all of it, yeah, but what tax
all
rate
of
is
it.
The question?
Well, you add on whatever their marginal bracket is, you add right on top of it.
Ooh.
Right? So married, filing jointly, let's assume they made no money, right? Then part of that money would have still been taxed at 22% under the current bracket.
Gotcha.
Under the current code. But in this case, it was 2 years ago. The brackets weren't lower, and it got added on to the other $120,000 a year they made. And
boy.
So they're suddenly paying 25 to 30% tax on money that they didn't have to pay taxes on at all because I still had the $250,000 brokerage account, right? So people get caught in this world where they try to make decisions in what we call a solo scenario, right? It's not a matter of whether you had access to the money. This is not even a question of whether or not it was a really good idea to pay off the mortgage, right? This was just a question of where should we put or which account should we use to be able to take care of the problem, right? And then the last one, and I will tell you, a big part of this is Social Security when you go through divorce. So I'm going to give you, if you want to know more about Social Security, you can go back to June 16th of 2018 and listen to that podcast that we did where we talked about Social Security and divorce and how it works. But if you've been married for somebody for 10 years or longer, you are eligible when you reach your retirement age to either take your Social Security or half of theirs.
Yes.
So we actually have a lady in Lafayette. We don't take care of her. We just kind of giggle about her. But she's been married to three different doctors, right, for 10 years and a month each.
Interesting.
Now,
hey, I saw a Lifetime movie that kind of, I think that was based on
this
her.
It's a Black Widow without the knife or the medicine. Anyhow, it's not that she can claim on all three. I don't know what the thought process was, but you got to be committed to Social Security, right? If you're going to marry somebody for 10 months and 10 years and a month. But it's weird and really, really strange. But Social Security, and you do not impact your ex-spouse, by the way. They don't even know that you did it. It's just you have to have the proof of marriage, the proof of divorce, right? And the Social Security Administration will hook you up. So that comes into play. But in death, you do get a step-up in basis on money that you have in brokerage accounts, but not in divorce. Not in divorce. So when you have an unplanned distribution where you've got to take money out, don't think about it like you would if somebody died. The marriage died, the person didn't, right?
Right.
And so, you know, one of the things, we actually have a certified divorce specialist on team. It's in Indiana, we don't see a lot of those that we have to go through. Out on the West Coast, there are a bunch, and she's in our Bozeman, Montana office. You know, so we're able to funnel a lot of those questions. But from a planning standpoint, when attorneys go to separate money up, they don't necessarily get the tax implications. They want to make sure that Angie got her money, right? But if part of Angie getting her money meant that somebody else got the IRA, then it's not a dollar for dollar deal.
No.
Right? And you've got to understand that, know how those taxes work, and you know where that funding truly comes from. Hey, if you want to know more like this, just let us know. We can tuck you to other podcasts to give you more information. You're listening to Consider This Program. I'm Joe Clark, along with Ken Dilger, and today, Angie Kinzer. 800-928-4001. We'll take a break and be right back. Well, good morning and welcome back to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark.
I'm Ken Dilger.
And I'm Angie Kinzer.
Happy to have you all along. Well, we're moving into what I would not refer to as my favorite day of the year, Angie.
No, nope.
You've known me a little longer than Ken.
Yeah, it seems like people start getting a little grouchy around here during this week.
It gets a little busier. You know, we work with a lot of CPAs, and you know, everybody needs everything now, and it's just one of those challenges. I had a discussion with one of our, she's in her mid-80s, one of our families today that we take care of, and she got a notice just this week, actually it was last week, that one of the exchange-traded funds that she holds had a company that paid a dividend, and the dividend was not deemed qualified by the IRS when they went back and looked at it. So a qualified dividend is held by a U.S.-based company, right? It has to be here. So not an ADR, not a Toyota or something like that, not overseas. But a qualified dividend is taxed differently than a non-qualified dividend. And so last year, she got a letter from a different exchange-traded fund. So obviously this doesn't happen in your IRA accounts. It happens when you've got money that's after tax, and she had to pay taxes on a dollar. And she didn't mind paying the taxes on the dollar. What she minded was the CPA charged $100 to redo the return. You know, so I assured her if that happened this year, if she called me, we would find a different solution to said problem. But it's one of those things that you can't control when you've already done your taxes. And they change these dividends. Sometimes I've seen them happen after April 15th, where you get the notice. Many people who have K-1 reports don't get them until after April 15th, even though they're supposed to be out. There's just too much math going on to get calculated. So you really have two dates in the tax code. And you've got April 15th when all that you owe is due, and you have October 15th when all the reporting that you need to do is required, right? So you'll have a lot of tax returns that are actually dated in October, and you're seeing more and more of those because there's so many different K-1 reports that tend to come out. Today, on the things, one thing leads to another, I thought we would talk about the difference between the short form and the long form. So, Ken, you look at tax returns all the time. How would you define the difference between a short form and a long form?
Good question. I really don't get into a long form or a short form.
Anytime they have a Schedule A, it's a long form.
Okay.
And those would be your deductions that you can have? Okay.
I really don't look at the deductions. I look at the AGI, Schedule Cs, that sort of thing.
Really?
Yeah. I really don't get into deductions. Unless they're self-employed, then we kind of add back in some depreciation, depletion.
Gotcha. All right, that makes sense.
Investment properties on there or whatever. So, yeah.
So what's happened when you've gone to pick up your taxes this year from your CPA is in many, many, many cases, that folder, that white envelope that I get that says confidential on the outside. So I always ask, just jokingly, why do I have to send it to the IRS if it's so confidential, right? But it says confidential on the outside. If you pick up that envelope and it is much thinner this year, it is because you are suddenly doing what's called the short form. So I the short form, long form is on your personal 1040. So Angie, it has nothing to do with our tax return here at the Financial Enhancement Group or any of the other businesses.
No, this would be for personal return.
Right. So if you are single, right? If you are single, you've got a standard deduction, if you will, of $12,000. Okay. However, you lost your personal exemption that you used to have for yourself.
Yes.
And in your case, your daughter, Ava, you lost your personal exemption. You still have one left from your daughter at school and one at home. So
correct.
You lost four personal exemptions, Ken. I lost two. Mine are gone, right? They've flown the coop. But those exemptions are gone. And in exchange for that, we got a higher standard deduction, right? Then they went into Schedule A on the standard deduction, and they started trimming the fat. So amazingly enough, on a normal person's tax return, right, on a normal person's tax return, so not high income, not business, most of the games that got played on the Schedule A came from a couple different places. One was in miscellaneous expenses, miscellaneous deductions. Now, the higher income people, it didn't really affect because, one, it had to be a certain percentage of your AGI to be able to deduct it. And two, it got phased out very, very quickly as income was higher. I mean, it just is. So there is no more miscellaneous deduction, right? I have no idea. Funny story. I'm sure I've shared it with you before. But, you know, when the tax code changed December, we knew December 17th, 5:30 on a Friday night, what the tax code said. We just knew it was December 22nd that the president signed and made it official back in 2017. I spent the next... Well, I read it was 1,097 pages long, and I read it that weekend.
Wow! Right?
I know I'm sick in the head, but that's all right. 4:30 on Monday morning, one of my CPAs texts me and says, "Did you see it?" It's kind of like I figured he was talking about the tax code, and no, that's not what he's talking about. The CPA Journal, digitally, the most sophisticated, the number one place that you would go to get information, had put out a piece on the tax code, except it was wrong. It had things in it that weren't in the 1,097 pages. It had a lot of things in it that were they thought up to the 12th hour was going in, and then they didn't go in, right? Mm-hmm. And it was our CPA partners in Muncie, Indiana, that caught that and got to call Washington and go, hello, right? Y'all made a boo-boo.
You're wrong.
Right? So you want to run around with smart CPAs. I mean, you want to be with people who really know what it is they're doing. But the point of this is I was cooked. I was exhausted. And Barb drug me to Florida, and I'm sitting in this condo thingy of one of her friends, and I'm watching TV, and it's got no DVR and no fast forward, so I have to watch commercials, right? And out comes this monster-looking thing in an outfit, you know, like one of those fake guys. And he's dancing on the screen, and he picks up the phone, and he calls the tax people that are advertising on this commercial and said, can I deduct this? And the CPA on the other end of the phone says, well, is it for work?
Meaning the costume.
Can I deduct this for work? And the person on the other end of the phone goes, yes, it's a miscellaneous expense. And I'm screaming at the TV. Barb thinks I'm a lunatic. I wonder how much shareholder dollars got wasted to produce this commercial, right? And somebody's going, I don't want to tell the boss that I spent, $500,000 to produce a commercial. So instead, I'm going to blow the marketing dollars, and I'm just going to tell people, right, that, good Lord. Anyhow, right, so there are no more miscellaneous expenses. Your property taxes and state taxes are limited to $10,000, which is why half of Illinois and Indiana have moved to Austin and El Paso, Texas, right? Because there's no state tax down there, so they can get away with it. One of the guys I work with paid Chicago over $1 million in income tax last year. That's just the state.
Wow.
And, you know, when you can't deduct any of that, that's a big hit.
Yes.
So he figures he bought an entire place down there for what he was paying the city of Chicago. And that's, they're losing two people for every one going in the state of Illinois right now. And the average income is half of the ones that are leaving. It's a very, very problematic area. But the short form you may get because you may want to take that standard deduction. In Angie's case, I told you it's $12,000. If you're under 65, it's $24,000. If you're married, filing jointly. And if you're over 65, you get $1,300. So $26,600 is what most people are going to get. And by definition, we will see a large part of the population suddenly take the short form for the first time in their lives.
Will that make it simpler? It'll make it
simpler because you don't have to have all of the stuff, but it means you have to have a whole new set of strategies. And it usually takes people a few years, Angie, to catch on to what the tax code is.
Mm-hmm.
But it by design, it was to make sure that people were more compliant. Let's put it that way. Hey, you're listening to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark, along with Ken Dilger, Angie Kinzer, 800-928-4001. We'll take a break and be right back. Well, good morning and welcome back to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark.
And I'm Ken Dilger.
I'm Angie Kinzer.
We've got a third voice in the house
yes.
today. So when you call at 800-928-4001 and you say, hey, I want to come in and talk to one of the advisors on the FEG team, Angie Kinzer is the one that you get to talk to. She's the lady with all of the answers.
About the company itself.
About the company.
Any kind of questions you have on the company, how we get paid, any of those kind of questions that aren't exactly portfolio related, because that's what you want to talk to one of our advisors about, your individual situation. But I can help you with any of the general questions about our company and then find a good time that you could come in and have a sit down with us.
So what is your most common question? What would Ken ask?
Let's see. A lot of people will call in and say, do you have a minimum? Will it, how much, you know, what is the minimum requirement, or do you have a maximum? They want to know if they fit in and if they would be a good fit, I guess, with our company. So they have a little bit of questions about their assets. They also always want to know, you know, maybe how we're paid. And they also want to know, do we have a charge to come in and sit down and talk with us?
And why do we not charge for that first meeting, Angie?
Because we're not always necessarily going to be a fit for each other, but because education is part of our makeup, we're always willing to sit down and at least explain, you can tell us this is how we see our financial vision right now, this is what our current plan is, and then we can come back and say, well, you're either doing great, I would leave things as they are, or, well, we think we could improve your situation, and if that's the case, and then we're a match for each other, that might be a good reason to.
And that's, you know, some people think that there's no way that you either sell stuff. There's no way that you could afford to have a charge for the first meeting. You know, that somebody called and said that they wanted to come in. There's no way you can be legitimate and not charge people. And we are very much in the business of being business. I am a capitalist. but I also understand why it is so critical that it's a good fit. When the Dow fell 1,000 points twice in 1 week, right, back in January of 2018, we got one email at 2:30 on Thursday afternoon. One email. We take care of almost 1,000 families and a little over $420 million, and we had an email. And that's because we take care of people who know that we keep our eye on the ball. You know, it's not people who've not been communicated. You get stuff from us every week. So they already knew our thoughts, knew what was going on. And so we have to be very, very careful who gets in. And the careful is much more on the attitude and the relationship than it is on the assets. We really care about what it is that you're trying to get accomplished and where we go.
And life circumstances do change. A gentleman that called in today, in the past, may not have been a good fit. He liked to handle his own decisions and manage his own assets. And what he called to say is look, I made a mistake this past December. He goes, things have gotten a little out of hand. I got emotional. He goes, that made me realize that it's time to pass the torch. I can no longer feel comfortable about managing my own assets.
Wow.
Emotions and money do not mix well, ever, just as a say. Well, I promised in this this section, the title of this whole show is One Thing Leads to Another. And I decided to revisit QCDs. We're starting to have people call in to talk about the required minimum distributions. And Ken, I'm not going to make you define a required minimum distribution, but do you remember what age it is?
70 and a half.
70 and a half. Guess what? We have a siding. You know, sidings are those things that are just not expected, right? It's called a bipartisan bill. Did you think there were such things as bipartisan in Washington right now? It has bipartisan support. And it's actually to extend the required minimum distribution from 70 and a half to 72. Now, as Ken knows, because he's been here for a while, technically the rule is not 70 and a half. The rule's the year after the year you turn 70 and a half. But if you waited till then, you had to take two distributions, the first one being before April 1st. So this bill, and I've read it, and I don't like talking about this stuff until it's done, but I want everybody who's 70 and a half to be aware that this has bipartisan support and could come up in this next session, but that would change it to 72 if you really don't want to take the distribution. And what we've found, Ken, and I know it's shocking, but it's why we do distribution planning, what we call by design, right? Because everybody's going to exit. Your retirement dollars will exit. It's either by your own design, by the force of the IRS with these required minimum distributions, or when you pass away, your heirs have to deal with it. And so we want to help people get on this, because if it changes to 72, here's what's going to happen. People are going to wait another year and a half because nobody wants to take the money out. That's what we find. You know, either they don't need the money, or they don't want to take it out because they can't imagine killing their baby, right? They've worked so hard to build up this account to a certain value that they don't want to extract anything from it, which, you know.
It's now a family member.
It's now, I call it the newest family member, and that people would invite their statements to Thanksgiving if they could.
Yes.
Right? A part of our identity is wrapped into 40 years of accumulating, and now the idea of distribution just doesn't work real well. Well, with the required minimum distribution, whatever the value of your account is, as of December 31st the year before, so whatever it was, December 31st of 18, And it's going to be shocking when you see that number, because December, as Angie just talked about, December was the ugliest December we've had since 1931, right? So you're going back to the Great Depression. January was the best January we've had since 1987. So longer than my 31, almost 32-year career now. But one of the things you can do with your required minimum distribution is actually make charitable gifts. So if you missed the last conversation where I talked about the short form and the long form, many people who are going to take the standard deduction now would no longer get a gift for charitable gifting. They would no longer rather get a deduction for the charitable gifting, right? So this is where you got to get out of the silo. You know, you don't mix the corns and the beans. You got to get out of the silo and go to the whole farm operation. To think that your taxes or your retirement income or your investments don't go hand in hand is to not understand the tax code that you're dealt with. And remember, guys, there's two tax codes in the United States. People think it's one for the rich and one for the poor. What is it, Angie?
It's one for the informed and one for the uninformed.
Right. So, for instance, if you had a large carry forward loss, you would have wanted to take money out last year and have a Roth IRA for free. That's another story. but seriously, guys, you have to understand how all of this works. So if your folder from your CPA is thin this year and you took the standard deduction, if you're over 65, you'll be able to look on your tax return and you'll see a number, if you're married, that essentially says $26,600. That means you took the standard deduction. anything you gave away to your church, your charities, anything like that, what we would call a 501c3 organization, is not being deductible. You're not getting any credit for it at all. So if you're over 70 and a half, you're a charitable giver, you need to find out what a QCD, a qualified charitable distribution, is. Folks, if your parents meet those qualifications, right? Because the people aren't talking about this, right? If your parents meet that qualification, if they're over 70 and a half and they're charitably inclined, you got to give Angie a call. Get on our books, 800-928-4001. We'll teach you how to use your RMD and get the most benefit for your buck. We have a program that's called the Better Giver. We do them for not-for-profits across the country. Well, I should say across the state right now. I think I agreed to do one out of state, so I can say country later this year. 800-928-4001. You're listening to Consider This Program. I'm Joe Clark, along with Ken Dulger and Angie Kinzer. You got any questions or comments, feel free to go to the website, yourlifeafterwork.com. We will take a break and be back in a flash. Well, good morning and welcome back to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark.
I'm Ken Dulger.
I'm Angie Kinzer.
And this is our summary period. So if you've missed the first part of the show or came in halfway through, we had four different conversations that we talked about. And this is usually, Angie, where I quiz Ken on the answers. And
see if he's paying attention, right?
I want to make sure that people are getting it, right?
Yes.
And so, you know, since you're new to the show,
okay,
you get to be the one that answers the quiz.
Oh, now I'm in the hot seat.
Yeah.
No wonder you were happy that I came in.
Exactly. And I'll let Ken help you a little bit.
Okay.
All right. So the first topic was unplanned distributions. So somebody asked what a distribution was the other day, and they said, I just want to be clear. Distribution is when you're taking money out of an account, right? Most of the time when we talk about it, it's coming out of something that is tax deferred. In other words, it has a tax implication to it. And we talked about the big three that we see happen in unplanned distributions: the loss of a job, a divorce, or death. So, Angie, one of the things that we talked about is if you inherit an IRA, is it taxable or is it not taxed? It's fully taxable to the beneficiary. Now, there's a difference. We didn't hit it in there, but there's a difference between a spouse and a non-spouse, right? A non-spouse is anybody but your spouse, just for the record.
Right.
The IRS explains it that way. I mean, really, the IRS defines it that way.
Seems simple enough, right?
It seems spouse, non-spouse, that's anybody but your spouse, right? Just one of those things that you ought to go. If you inherit a brokerage account, how much, what's your basis?
Well, it's already been taxed.
Has it already been taxed? Or do you get a step up? You get a step up. So if you inherit money that's in a brokerage account or in a trust, and that money was given to you at death, you get a step up in basis. If it was given to you at life, during life, you retain their basis. So we're having this issue right now with some stock that was granted to a CEO of a company, and we take care of their family. And now we're trying to figure out what the actual basis is, because the gift was made during life, not death. We talked about the new tax return, the short form and long form, and that many people are going to take a different kind of deduction than before. So, Ken, will more people take itemized or the standard deduction now?
Standard.
Yes. And how's come? Because the standard deduction was raised from $12,400 for you and me, married filing jointly,
to
$24,000. Miscellaneous expenses have been eliminated on Schedule A. Your state and property taxes are limited to $10,000. That leaves mortgage interest and charitable gifting. And the bottom line is, in central Indiana, most of us don't have that much mortgage interest, right? And so unless you're very big into the charitable space, you're not going to have a lot of those itemized deductions.
They'll be less than your standard deduction.
And people are going to take the standard deduction.
What about the excise tax?
That goes under state and property taxes.
Okay.
So Barb, when, you know, bless her little heart, she knows everything I need to get done with taxes. And
and
I do get emotional over them, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Roy Rogers said that he was proud to pay taxes, but he'd be just as proud at half the price. You know, I kind of have that emotional, you know, feeling, because I would rather take that money and reinvest here or in our community than to send it off to Washington. But that's just me. So When you get a smaller envelope from your CPA, there's a good chance that you're going to be taking the short form and taking the standard deduction. But Barb got out the license plates.
Yes.
She got out the property tax stuff from the bank.
Well, because
we've always done it. And I got there to Ben's office, and I'm looking at it going, honey, I don't need all this stuff. You know, this is pretty simple. So you want to know what's going on. If you go, you can go to the second conversation that we had about this. If you want to know back on the unplanned, I forgot to tell you, if you want to know more about the Social Security planning and divorce, you can go back to June 16th of 2018 and listen to that conversation, or October 27th of 18. I hit both of those a little bit more in detail. The third conversation was QCDs Revisited. So Ken, do you remember what a QCD stands for?
Qualified Charitable Distribution.
Woohoo!
Yay! Not that.
There you go. That's a beautiful, beautiful thing. So before you do your required minimum distribution this year, if you're over 70 and a half, before you start taking your RMD, if you are charitably inclined, you have got to call us 800-928-4001 and find out how qualified charitable distributions work. This is the biggest no-brainer in the tax code since we lost the Roth and the ability to recharacterize on conversions. This is the sweetie. I mean, again, you have to be over 70 and a half, and you have to be charitably inclined. If those two things fit, you should call. Because if you're taking, go back to the last conversation, if you're taking the standard deduction, you're no longer getting any tax credit for deducting those charitable contributions any longer, right? So very, very, very important part. And then Angie Kinzer, tell me about the Mega Roth.
I do have one quick question on the QCDs.
Right.
I want to know if there are still strategies out there if you're not 70 and a half, but yet you're charitably inclined.
Absolutely. So the way we do that, if you have money, and this is why we preach tax diversification, right? When somebody comes in, we talk to them about whether they're in the accumulation stage, the preservation stage, and the distribution stage. If you're in the accumulation phase, your two goals are saving the right percentage of your income, but building tax diversification. And it's so when you're 65, you've got the ability to make these kind of decisions. You can't get the money out of your IRA yet, right, in order to make the charitable gift without paying taxes on it. So the QCD is not eligible till 70 and a half. But what we do is help people gift appreciated stock, right? So let's say Susan has an Apple stock in her account that we bought back in 2006, which we did, right? Her basis is $9 a share, and she wants to make a gift to the university, right? So she takes the standard deduction, so she's not going to get a deduction for it on her tax return, right? But she still wants to make the gift. And so we would have her write the check to TD Ameritrade. That's where we keep all of our money at the Financial Enhancement Group. We would have her write a check to TD Ameritrade to go into her brokerage account, and we would simultaneously transfer shares of Apple to the church account, which we also have here. And if your church or charity doesn't have an account, I set them up for free on my dollar. We take this charitable gifting stuff pretty seriously. We move it over to that account. We sell the stock. The church gets the money. You pay no capital gains. We take the check that you wrote in, and we buy more of Apple stock, and you say you have the exact same security. All you've done is step up your basis in case we ever did have to sell Apple. That way you wouldn't have a lot of taxes on your return.
So it's a win-win for both your charity.
It's a win-win. It doesn't hurt the charity. They get the same amount of money and certainly helps you. And now you stalled so that you didn't have to explain
the
Mega Roth.
I did stall, and it's because I'm trying to think of ways I can take advantage of this Mega Roth because this is new. This was a new concept that you introduced to me today. And
that's because you weren't on planning day. We'll fix that next time.
I know, I won't go on vacation.
You're listening. There you go. Hey, you're listening to Consider This Program. I'm Joe Clark, along with Ken Dilger, Angie Kinzer, our events coordinator. If you got a question or comment, give her a call, 800-928-4001. Appreciate you tuning in to Consider This Program. Have a wonderful week, 800-928-4001.